Hey guys, this is Jacques. Welcome back to Unpopular. It's been a while. I feel like I haven't been here forever. I'm back from my longest break ever. I've missed so much stuff. I missed Succession. I missed Love is Blind. I missed Tucker Carlson. Actually, maybe I didn't miss that much. I mean, that isn't that many things, right? Yeah, whatever. Maybe I didn't miss that much. And I actually did not miss recording and editing this shit because my whole evening has now been gone editing the interview that I have coming up. Well, not the interview, the guest that I have on. I've been editing that for hours. That's because I have ADHD, guys, and I just can't focus. And, you know, I just have to do a million things at once. Obviously, I had a baller star-studded trip to Los Angeles. Well, you know, once I got my phone back from fucking Fiji. I think you know the story by now. I posted it on Patreon. I posted it all over my Instagram, which you should be following. If you're a Patreon subscriber, you have access to all my LA episodes that I did, you know, about hanging out with Spencer Pratt and the Real Housewives. I rode a bike along the beach with Kelly Dodd. I hung out at Crystal's house. I even FaceTimed with Diana Jenkins, which I think is like the closest anybody has got to doing an interview with her because she just does not do media. But I FaceTimed with her. So, you know, lucky me. I actually thought that I hadn't recorded in over a month, but I remember I did do like a low budget Dylan Mulvaney episode live from LA. I forgot about that one. And then some people told me that I sounded like tired and like busted up on that. That was recorded in the midst of a lot going on, guys. Okay. But, you know, we had to get some content out. I've actually been getting dragged by the Dylan Mulvaney stans on TikTok, like really bad. I haven't checked it for a while, so it's probably died down now, but like for a few weeks, I couldn't even open TikTok because the Dylan stans were on my fucking ass because I went on the Blonde Files podcast and I was asked about the Bud Light controversy because it was like raging at the time I did her pod and I wasn't prepared to talk about it. I didn't know we would be talking about it. And I was very PC, you know, I was very safe for work. I used all the right pronouns. Well, this is what happened. She actually had a can of Bud Light. Like, I was like really careful and I still got fucking roasted and dragged. I kept saying that I was like bitter and jealous of Dylan's success, which is really funny. Like, that could not be further from the truth. That's the one thing that I like about Dylan. Like, I think Dylan is a PR genius. I think he is so funny and like very savvy. It's the one thing that I really, really like about him. Everything else, not so much, just an annoying like musical theater drag queen, like no thank you. But the way he's playing the media, it's almost like Spidey level. I know that's like a big title to give Dylan, but it's giving Spidey right now, Spidey at Spidey's peak. And he's so good at what he does that even some of the like kind of contrarian, like anti-woke people that I follow on, you know, Twitter, they're supposed to dislike him. And now they're like fans because they're buying into the shtick. It's kind of crazy to see. River Page, shout out River Page. He's a great writer. I follow him on Twitter. He's one of my favorite follows. He does really great articles on everything. I pretty much like agree with him on, I don't know, the high 90% of things. And he got sucked into this kind of classy faux higher ground video that Dylan did after the Bud Light debacle. And Dylan was kind of, you know, offering an olive branch and saying that he wants to share parts of himself that have nothing to do with gender. And he's still holding onto his Christian faith and he's choosing to turn the other cheek and he just loves everybody, but he can't understand why people would dehumanize him and be so cruel. And it's like, girl, you were intentionally provocative with every video you put out when you came on the scene. You knew exactly what you were doing with the Barbie pouch, with the bulge, with the girlhood. You know, I think conservatives got fooled by it too, where they thought that he really thought that. And it's like, no, girl, like he's doing that to piss you off. And you took the bait because you got pissed off by it. So it worked. The tampons, everything. It was all designed to kind of provoke, to be provocative. And it really kind of peaked with Bud Light. That was the best thing that ever happened to Dylan. It made him pretty much like a household name. I mean, look, if you asked your like grandmother who was Dylan Mulvaney, she wouldn't fucking know. But anyone that's like very online or reads like any form of tabloid or whatever knows who Dylan is now. And now that, you know, he's hit that fame peak, he's scaling it back. He's not doing the misogynistic woman face stuff anymore because he got the buzz from that. And now it's like he's going mainstream. He's taking off some of the rougher edges of his persona. It's masterful PR strategy. I love it as someone that works in tabloids and follows media and celebrity. You know, I want to see Dylan on The Surreal Life. I want to see Dylan on Celebrity Big Brother. I'm into it. You know, I think he's great. I just can't believe how many smart people have fallen for it in the sense that they think it's sincere now, because I guess the vitriol towards Dylan has been kind of like so horrible from some people. Not that it's completely unwarranted, and I get where it comes from because sort of Dylan is like representative of like a real problem, but I get that libs love Dylan because they're so dumb. I mean, they keep arguing with me going, Dylan's literally 100% a real woman. So it's like, I can't reason with you. But like even the most dissident figures online are treating Dylan like a genuine person now, which I guess is just like a testament to how good Dylan is at playing the fame game. So good for you, girl. Everyone is getting scammed. People just fall for everything. Like I was listening to Megyn Kelly and she's citing Ollie London now on her show. And she's like, this Ollie London is doing great work exposing the gender madness going on in the left. It's like, girl, Ollie is literally Dylan Mulvaney on the other side of the coin. Like he pretended to be Korean, then transgender, and now he's a fake detransitioner so he can get booked on, you know, Piers Morgan. And it worked. Like, good for Ollie. I've been a fan of Ollie for a long time too, but I swear, like, people just fucking believe anything. You believe the Real Housewives. I was on yesterday, and I saw some like Atlanta Housewives account that I follow. I don't know if I follow it or the algorithm has shoved it in my face because I got rid of so many Housewives accounts that I followed. And now I feel like the changes to the algorithms, you keep showing me this shit. I'm like, I don't want to see it. I don't want to see the dumb memes. Like, I don't want to see these unfunny, uncreative people with their shitty takes on this over the hill show now, but it keeps getting rammed down my throat. And I saw Sheree and Kenya from Housewives of Atlanta having a fight on Twitter during the day of the premiere, of course. And this like account posted it and was like, oh my God, I'm so sad that they aren't getting on anymore. And then like, you know, had like 1,000 comments and everyone's like weighing in. It's like, you know, this isn't a real fight, right? It's the day of the premiere. So they're having, you know, a pantomime spat on Twitter for y'all. It's literally like UK panto. If you're not from the UK, you might not know what it is, but they do these like pantomime things where they'll do a play of fucking, I don't know, Hansel and Gretel or something, and they'll get people from Neighbours and EastEnders to be like the celebrity guests there, and the crowd participate in it. So it's like the crowd are like, you know, booing the villain that fucking comes out on stage. I don't know, evil Humpty Dumpty, and all the kids are like, boo, boo. And it's like, that's what y'all are doing when you're getting involved in these Housewives fucking Twitter fights. They're doing childish, dumb arsery pantomime for y'all, and then you're like weighing in like it's a real thing. It's like, this isn't real. But that's what makes MTV's The Real Friends of WeHo so refreshing, because as much hate as that show got, and it's actually pretty good, it is a reality show that breaks the fourth wall, and it becomes a reality show about making a reality show, and then the fights on the show fights about being on a show. They even have a fight about someone starting a fake fight. So I get into all of it with my fellow Aussie podcaster, Matteo. I don't even know if that's how I meant to pronounce his name. I didn't ask, but I don't know. We just feel like more Twitter friends. So, I mean, we talk too, but like, girl, I don't know how to pronounce any. Like, I'm all used to these like parasocial internet relationships. So I don't really know how to like communicate with anybody in real life, but I call him Matteo. And we talk about all the gay backlash to the series, as well as the differences between Australia and America, because he's like me. He's trying to get the fuck out of Australia and get to the States. There's an exodus among us. So, you know, we get into that. And so, all right, let's do it. Make sure you're following me on Instagram at UnpopularJP. I post there all the time. And if you can, share the podcast with your friends. If you have some gay besties, post this one in the group chat because we talk about some gay stuff. Gays love to hear gays talking about other gays and then hate on them or whatever. So, like, post it in the group chat, y'all. It helps me grow. Leave me a 5-star review, of course, on Apple or Spotify. That always helps. And I will see you, who knows when I'll see you, probably next week. Bye, guys. Hey guys, welcome back to the pod. I am joined by my friend Matteo. He is a writer and the host of the literary and culture podcast Getting Lit. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you? You look nice and fresh from your States trip.
I feel like I look like battered and bruised. It was like I felt like I looked really good at the start of the trip. And then by the end, when it's like, you haven't been to the gym and you haven't been able to I don't know if you dye your hair. I do. The grays are coming through. I was starting to fall to pieces Betty Davis at the end of Whatever Happened to Baby Jane. So I was ready to come back. You don't sound transgender this time because you did last time we recorded.
No, I don't. I sound like an actual man.
You know, that was so funny because when you came on to do White Lotus, I think you're on a Christmas holiday, I think, mm-hmm. maybe, and you're in some hotel room and you just sort of had a rinky dink setup.
That's right.
And we were trying to figure the audio and your voice was really high pitched. And I was I think there's something wrong. And you were no, everything's fine on my end. And then I was maybe he's just sounds like a huge faggot. And then I felt bad. So I didn't want to push it. And then when we released the episode, you were oh my God, I sound so high pitched. I'm girl, I know.
Well, yes, you last time your audience, got the transgender, but I've detransitioned now and my balls have dropped again and now I sound like a man.
I wanted to ask you, how is your green card application going? Because I know that, you're in the green card lottery and you're like me and we're both desperate to get to America.
Yes, because Australian gays are so lame. Yeah. No, I found out on the weekend actually and I didn't get selected, unfortunately, which is... but I figured I'll try for another visa maybe and maybe apply again the following year or something. I mean, I can probably... If I found a job, I could probably do that. I should have done it earlier, to be quite honest. But
that's what I feel like because now I'm trying to move over. Guys, if you follow me on Patreon, you'll already know this. But if not, yes, I'm trying to get over to LA. Nothing's confirmed yet, but I'm trying to get a job there. And I'm kind of why didn't I just do this years ago when I wanted to? I was always in my head. I was oh, it's too hard. It feels impossible. And now that I'm trying to make it happen, I'm just I should have done this before. But, you know... It is what it is. You're going there this month, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm going there end of the month. So, it'll be nice just sort of to catch up with friends and to get a little bit of summer.
Where are you stopping, specifically?
I'll be going to LA and then good old Texas and then to Miami and then probably a few little... I'm not sure where I'm going in between there, but yeah.
Oh my God, so good. You're going all over the place.
Yeah. I like the problem is that most of my friends are on the other side from Australia. So you have to go LA and then to go to the East Coast and stuff. But I've been to Florida, but I've never been to Miami. So that should be fun. I'm looking forward to dressing like a Cuban with because I've got heaps of gold chains and with my shirt undone with the hairy chest sort of look. I'm looking forward to that.
Megyn Kelly said that there's block party shootouts on the beach in Miami now. That's, so, girl, you have to be careful. Megyn Kelly said, don't go there.
I would prefer that to fucking hippies cuddle puddling in my house, to be quite honest.
What do you think of LA? Because when I first got there, I was wow, this is so much nicer than I expected. Because obviously you see the conservative media and they're it's a hellhole. And then I got there and I'm oh, it's actually really nice. Although I will say, by the end of the trip, so I was there for almost a month, kind of some of the homeless stuff was starting to grate on me. It wasn't just the people in the tents. You can just walk past them. I know it's horrible to say, but honestly, you get used to it really quickly and you just don't even look at them really. You're just whatever. But it's more the drugged out tweakers that are the issue because then you feel like, oh, wow, I need to, like, cross the street now because that person's, like, thrashing around like a zombie. And then you realize, like, oh, this, I've seen a thrashing around zombie drugged out person, like, four times this week. Like, that's when it starts to, like, grate on you, I think.
Yeah, and but I don't think that's, like, that's not just in LA. That's all over America. It's a highly medicated nation. Like, those are the illegal medications, in scare quotes, but then there's other sorts of medications, I guess, that other people who are more well-off kind of take. I love LA. I love the history. I love, you know, the history of Hollywood, all that sort of stuff. I also love the different, because LA is basically like a whole heap of smaller cities in one. It's like a thriving kind of metroplex, I guess. And you can always find one of those and, like, just explore those for weeks on end. Like, last time I was in LA, I basically never left Santa Monica, and it was incredible, like, amazing place. But, and then you can just go to all different other places in LA and just enjoy it. It's not, that's one of the dismissal of LA is like, oh, it's just all homeless people and drug addicts and all this sort of shit. Yeah, that's some parts of it, but other parts of it are just really beautiful. And not even just the bougie, like, rich Beverly Hills parts. Like, there are really nice kind of communities there that are great to explore. Yeah.
It's really diverse, which kind of surprised me, just in terms of, like, you have the kind of bougie celebrity hotspots, you have these more, like, rundown, cool, like, hipster enclaves, you have, like, the beachy. So, like, I was in Venice, and I'm like, this looks like Bondi, mm-hmm. like Sydney Bondi, just, like, rich white people walking around at, like, overpriced cafes. And then, of course, you have, like, the homeless stuff, too. You have a little bit of everything. Yeah, I really loved it. I loved the weather. I'm excited to, like, relocate there.
I've heard that you're thinking about OC or somewhere in LA.
No, I wish I could afford OC. No, that's too far from everything. Yeah. But when I went to OC, I was like, this is a paradise. Have you been to OC?
I haven't. It looks amazing.
Oh, my God. It's wild when you're just driving from LA and then into OC. It's full on, like, a different country. Everything is different. It's so clean. The service is so nice. Like, I was riding a bike along the beach and then stopped at some bar and got, like, clam chowder. And it's just very picturesque.
Did you ever watch the soap, The OC?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah. Was the theme song playing in your head as you sort of...
No, the Housewives of OC theme music, because I was hanging out with one of the housewives from the OC, and then we were, like, riding down a part where they were, like, filming, and I'm like, this is so crazy. I'm like, now I'm with one of the OC housewives in the OC. Wait, like, riding my bike around.
They were filming you riding, or...?
No, they weren't filming, but I was with one that, like, she got fired because she was too problematic, so of course I'm her friend now.
I was going to say, could you imagine how jealous those bitches would be if you got in one of those shows.
They already are, which that was one of the best things about the trip, because when I was like, yes, because I've kind of moved away from the Housewives content a lot. I still do it on Patreon, but I don't, like, tweet about it as much anymore. And I'm just like, it's turned into a show for stupid people, which is sort of like Drag Race. Mm-hmm. It's like, it was sort of something special at the beginning. And then when it gets super mainstream, it morphs into just like this Disney-fied kind of overproduced, like, mass product. But I got so much shit from all of those Housewives fans for so long that I'm a racist, I'm a loser, you know, like, oh my God, he thinks he's so good because he works at the Daily Mail, like, just everything. Like, they were so mean to me. And then I was literally in LA, like, I was in the fucking house, like, I was in Crystal's house from Housewives of Beverly Hills. She invited me over. The story of that's on Patreon, guys, if you sign up. I'm riding along the beach with, like, the OC housewives. Like, I was doing the damn thing, and I'm like, yeah, fuck you guys. Like, you're in a group chat. I'm, like, in their house, and they're bringing me a muffin. As, like, I get all the tea on the shows, you know? So
I love that you mentioned that, yeah, how they think that you're so good because you work at the Daily Mail. And I'm just like, actually, you are so good because you work at the Daily Mail, because you are doing God's work with those headlines, especially. Like, some of those are so shady.
Like, I know. I'm like, it's an art form. People don't realize how difficult it is to sort of, like, it has to be, like, a professional kind of headline, but then you've got to, like, slip it in, but it can't be too obvious. Like, it's got to...
Yeah.
There's, like, an
Your headlines, like, detailing the M. Rashiano stuff, like, masterpieces.
Oh my God. That's been my favorite thing to cover, like obsessed. I've even submitted that when I've been like applying to LA. I'm going to put that as like one of my things, because I was like, yeah, so this is what happened. And then it started off this like whole saga. How come you want to move to America? Like, what is it for you that has like made you want to go there? Because I know that you and I are both kind of like very disillusioned with Australia.
Yeah, I think it was like the pandemic stuff really kind of black-pilled me on this country a little bit. And not so much it was the policies and all that sort of stuff. And I'm kind of sick of talking about it, but so I won't like rehash all of it. I think you've done enough of that on your show probably. So,
oh my God, I have.
So your audience is very au fait with that. But I would say that it was more the response from Australians themselves, in the sense that how people were just so complacent and uncritical and just took it all laying down with very few exceptions. I mean, there were some protests and stuff during the height of it, but it wasn't substantial, you know, so.
Yeah, I'm on the same page with you. That was like a final straw for me. And then also going over to the States, I fully experienced and understood the whole tall poppy syndrome thing that people talk about in Australia, which I'd always heard about. If you're not Australian, you might not know the saying, guys, but it basically means like if you grow too big, if you get too tall, they'll want to cut you down. And that's the thing in Australia. No one wants you to get like too big, so they'll always like drag you down. And I'd always heard about that, and I kind of thought people were exaggerating. And I even looked at Americans more in a negative way because it is so capitalistic, and sometimes they are like so obsessed with like money and like status and everything. So I looked at them in a negative way. But then going over there, I don't know, I had people that were so supportive of me, helping me out, collaborating. I've been like working on different projects. Like, everyone wants to make money and succeed and do things and work together. And I was just like thinking, in Australia, I'm like, no one fucking helps me with any. I mean, of course, a few people have, but in general, like for the most part, like no one's done anything for me. Even just going over there, I went on some like pretty popular podcast. It was all filmed and everything. And I'm like, no one's even asked me on a podcast in Australia.
I have.
Oh, yeah. Well, you, but you know, like I've been on a couple, but I mean, like there's no like mainstream big shows or anything outside of my like Twitter niche, like cool friends like you. Like, no one's having me on like some big show or whatever. And I'm thinking, well, I don't know, I have like a lot of credentials. I'm like pretty entertaining. And like, girl, like, come on, where's the invite? But it's not just that, it's just like in general. So it was kind of crazy for me to witness the difference in like the culture in regards to that.
Yeah, you are right in terms of the cultural differences between Australians and Americans. Like, it's funny because Australia is very similar to America in a lot of ways, but it's also very different. Like, so in that regard, the tall poppy syndrome, like the idea of like going out there being successful and, you know, whatever that means, that could mean making heaps of money, that could mean like being a really great artist or whatever. In Australia, that's just like, people are just like, eh. But when in America, everyone's doing their own thing and they're very happy that you're doing your own thing too. And it's not this like, oh, what are you doing that for? You know, which is such a like annoying kind of part of the Australian psyche, you know, like, why don't you conform? Why don't you be complacent like the rest of us? Why don't you, you know, get a boring corporate job like the rest of us, sort of thing, which that's there in other cultures, obviously, but like it's particularly pronounced here, I think.
Yeah, massively. Like, I was kind of shocked by how much I noticed it. And I always tell people, though, because I'm still like, look, Australia's a great place to live, but it is kind of for basic bitches. You know, like, it's like, dude, if you just want like a cruisy life and some like nice chill people or whatever, like, it's good. Like, it's clean, you know, like.
Oh, yeah, that's yeah. And that's the entire, it's very comfortable. Comfortable is the good word for it. Like, and that is what I think is part of the pandemic stuff, was that people were too comfortable here for too long. So, they just went, okay, the government can do what it wants.
Yeah, no, 100%.
Yeah.
Okay, you're here to talk about The Real Friends of WeHo, which is funny because we're both trying to get to WeHo. That is a show on MTV, a short-lived 6-episode reality show. I mean, it hasn't been cancelled yet, but I kind of assume that it has been. It's about a group of gay guys in West Hollywood. It was the subject of, I would say, like, an unhinged level of backlash when it premiered earlier this year. It's got, like, I don't know, it's a group of semi-notable gays. So, Brad Goreski and Todrick Hall are probably the most famous of the bunch. It follows a very similar kind of docu-soap format to Bravo shows, so like Summer House, The Real Housewives, etc. So, you get a bunch of people, they've been cast on a show, they kind of pretend to be a friend group, maybe they sort of know each other. You follow their lives, you follow their drama. Surprisingly, most of the cast didn't want to do a catty show coming into it. Which ended up being very interesting, and why it didn't, I don't know, it hindered the show, but it also kind of made it interesting on a different level. Minorities in Hollywood, they kind of have this representation brainwashing, I think, where they feel like they need to be model minorities all the time. They came in, and a lot of them, except I would say like Joey Zozig, the influencer, they came in straight off the bat just like wanting to promote their businesses and their brands, you know?
Yeah, the funniest one was James and his husband Jonathan.
where
they're like trying to do, what's it called, out travel or something? Their gay travel business.
Yeah, it's this gay travel agency for like over the hill bug chasers that want to go to like Cancun. It was so trash, and he took it so seriously. And he's married to this guy James. When I was writing my notes for the show, I kept calling him Virginia because he was like from there, and he had the accent.
Virginia.
And he's married to Jonathan Bennett, who was the love interest in Mean Girls. And he keeps trying to hype up Jonathan Bennett like he's just this huge A-lister. Like, oh, being married to Jonathan Bennett. It's like, girl, it's Jonathan Bennett. Like, calm down.
And also, he seems completely uninterested in the show too. He's like, oh, yeah, all right, I'll do a couple of scenes.
Yeah, well, they had this stupid podcast. It looked horrible.
Yes,
it
was like Pridecast.
This normie, like, gay rainbow flag podcast they do together. I mean, James, though, was, like, the hottest guy, I think, physically. Like, I think he was the most attractive, don't you think?
Yeah, probably. I would probably agree with that, yeah. Curtis was pretty hot, though.
Yeah, he was. I mean, most of them were attractive in different ways. When they released the show, this caused a lot of backlash. They cut down the runtime of Drag Race, apparently. So, it was going for 90 minutes, which I was not aware of. Like, I can't watch 10 minutes.
Yeah, I don't watch Drag Race anymore. But I will be watching the next All-Stars, though, because it has one of my favorites, Darian, on it, who I think is hilarious. And she's the really fat one.
There's a lot of fat ones.
But she's the OG fat one. One of the OG fat ones. But I've heard that the shorter episodes were better. Actually, I think Zach, who you've had on your show before, mentioned this to me, that, like, because they were shorter, there was more energy and it was like the old seasons of the show, rather than these kind of, like, padded out, like, flabby affairs that the kind of really long episodes were, you know?
I feel like the gays kind of have Stockholm syndrome with Drag Race now, which I understand because I still watch some of the Housewives shows, because you get in a habit of being sucked into like a franchise and they produce so much content. And, you know, once one season ends, there's another season or there's a spin-off or whatever to watch. So, it's kind of hard to break the cycle. And then a lot of people don't want to admit that this thing is part, like, it's jumped the shark. Like, this isn't that thing you fell in love with.
But it's also really, the other part that's sad about it is that it's basically like people's entire personalities. Like, all it seems like a certain kind of basic gay is basically barking catchphrases from Drag Race at each other all night.
Or the Real Housewives. Or it's those are the two. It's the house. That's one. There was many reasons I'm like, let me separate a little bit from the Housewives. But that was one, because I would just log on to Twitter and it's like, oh, this is your whole life. Like, you're completely obsessed. And I mean, like, it's not that good anymore. Like, it was fun at the start. Same with Drag Race. And I'm like, now it's like, you need to find a new hobby. Like, you need to move on. You've got to accept that, like, the party's over. Like, you know, it's 4 a.m. Why are you still here? Go home. Like, it's just too much. When I was in LA, my friend, no shade to him, but he still watches it. And he's like, oh, I've got to watch the finale. I'm like, cool. And like, he put it on. And girl, it looked like American Idol or The Voice. Like, it was so cheesy. They had a thing. They were singing some inspirational song. I can't remember. And the people in the crowd, like, were like swaying. Like, it was like, we are one. And then they did like a PSA of, you know, like, we need to defend drag shows, like their political messaging and stuff. It was so corny. And I'm like, God, this was so cool in those early seasons with the Vaseline camera and when it was low budget. And these were just like real drag queens that had been out on the scene, like, you know, doing the damn thing, like, broke.
Who would make fun of that sort of schmaltz, you know? Like, I remember there was a challenge in one of the... This is turning into a Drag Race show.
Who cares? It's fine. Yeah. It's a gay show.
But I remember in one of the early seasons, they did, like, a parody song of, like, that whole thing in the 80s with like Live Aid and We Are the World and stuff. Do you remember that challenge? And it was like,
I don't remember.
It was like making fun of like doing that sort of schmaltzy pop song sort of thing, right? Like, so that's what the show used to be. And now the show is that, the thing that they were making fun of.
It's horrifying. It was I couldn't believe it. Like, I was like nauseous. And then they would cut to like Cara Delevingne in the audience and like every A-list. I'm like, God, I remember when you had to like get the most Z-list people like to come on as like a guest judge. And it's just so fucking corny. Anyway, the gays were like outraged that they had their runtime of this ridiculous Drag Race show cut. So that was part of the reason that they came for the WeHo cast. I mean, that's one of the reasons that they're giving, but the truth is the gays would have come for this show regardless whether they cut Drag Race or not, because they're just like jealous haters. I want to go through some of these like cast members more. We have, Brad Goreski. He's definitely the biggest one. He's like a reality veteran. He was from the Rachel Zoe Project, which is kind of like one of the OG reality shows. He was the assistant. I think he's pretty good looking. I like Brad. And they also have this Lifetime movie actor, Curtis Hamilton. They have Joey Zorzig, an influencer and sugar baby. They have Dorian Renard, who runs a boutique skincare brand for POCs. We'll get into him. Who I actually love him, by the way. I thought he was a Virgo like me, but he's an Aquarius. I related to him the most. And then Todrick Hall, who is so controversial and so hated on gay Twitter. I still don't even understand what he does. I mean, I kind of have an idea of it now from watching the show. I guess he kind of like dresses in drag and sings these like horrible songs,
yeah,
right?
Like is that it? Sub RuPaul music. Like, it's that bad. It's just terrible.
He had a performance on one part and it was something like, it was like, I'm covered in glitter, glory and glitter or something. And I'm like, this is appalling.
Covered
like,
in glitter at the glory hole.
It wouldn't even be that edgy. It was so bad. And I've been hearing his name for years. And I'm always like, who the fuck is Todrick Hall? I'm like, was he on Drag Race? Like, I don't understand him as a personality. But I do remember that he went on Celebrity Big Brother. And that's when he got so much hate because he came the runner-up, but apparently he played a really nasty game on there, even though that's like, I don't know, I mean, that's the game, right? You've got to like lie and manipulate to like win, but I guess he went too far and people just couldn't get over it. I don't know. I feel like the level that people hate him, because he got cancelled as well because apparently he didn't like pay his dancers or he didn't pay his rent or something like that. But he addresses all of that on the show. And I feel like he had, like, pretty good explanations. Like, I thought he was very likable. Like, did you?
Yeah, I think his thing is, like, people have a visceral reaction to him. Like, this show actually made me like him. Like, I used to hate him. Not for, like, I didn't really give a shit about the rent or the dancer thing or whatever. I don't care. But, like, he was just sort of an annoying presence on RuPaul's Drag Race. Like, it seemed like...
Also, he was on Drag Race.
Yeah, he was a judge and he used to do the choreography sometimes for their dance routines and stuff.
Okay.
And to me, he just always seemed a bit like, this is just my point of view. Like, to me, he just seemed like not professional enough to be on the show, but, you know, whatever. It was, you know, this was olden days, RuPaul's Drag Race, when they couldn't get, like, high-level choreographers. But, and he just seemed annoying in that way that some of the judges on those kind of shows are, which is, like, who the hell are you to be critiquing these bitches, you know?
Yeah.
But this show actually made me like him a little bit because, like, there are just some really funny moments involving him. like the end, we'll get to that later, I guess. But like, he's just, he's kind of a monster and knows he is in this show, which is kind of entertaining.
Yeah, I thought he was fine. I thought his explanations for why he was cancelled and then the kind of backlash that he gets, he articulated it very well. I thought he was like a fun like he wasn't, He was in there obviously trying to rehab his image like everyone else, but he was still game to like be on the show and to interact and stuff. He wasn't like James and Dorian that were so concerned about their image in that way that they were like messing things up on the show. So like I had no problem with him, but yeah, the backlash to this was so severe. There were petitions, and I just want to say that I was right because when this show got announced, I had my friend Jess Rothschild from the Hot Takes and Deep Dives podcast. She's a regular on the pod. Shout out, Jess. And we were talking about it, and I went on this rant about, like, trust me, the gays are going to cancel this. The gays are going to come after this. They're going to start petitions to have it off the air. And she was like, Jacques, like, calm down. Like, no one's writing petitions. Like, you're making up a scenario that hasn't even happened yet. Like, it was sort of like I was on my Megyn Kelly Tucker, like, outrage circuit to a Piers Morgan vibe. And then, of course, petitions pop up, and they started fucking petitions to take the show off the air. I'm like, girl, I knew that they would. These jealous ass faggots. And the whole thing that they hate about this is it should have been me. It should have been me. Like, they're just so jealous. And every gay guy thinks that they should be the star of a reality show and that their friend group is interesting enough to have cameras follow them around. It's like, newsflash, it's not, because you're not on the show. Mm. So, like,
this is the thing, though, on the internet. Like, that is where I think where the impulse comes from. It's like, it should have been me. It should have been me. Because, like, I think who said this? Jack from TPN said this, I think, like that, you know, every gay thinks they can do it better than the other gay who's doing it, you know? But it's that. So I think that's where it's coming from. But the rationalizations are hilarious too. Like the kind of woke rationalizations, like it's not representative enough. And it's just like, you can tell that the producers foresaw that that was going to be a critique, which is why they lent in so much with the black guys, like, and made them, like, this is big, you know, representation, like, and, like, it's particularly with, like, Curtis's storyline, because he had this, like, he was coming out, so, in scare quotes, on the show, and, like, it was involving his family who were kind of religious. And then you had the other guy who's sort of the other extreme, like Dorian, who's this hilarious, like, Randian businessman who I think is fabulous because he's so evil. And he's just like, I don't give a fuck, but and like, I'm here to promote my, like, POC makeup skincare range. And it's just super open about it, which is awesome.
That's the only reason he was there. Like, even the first party that he goes to, like, I think him going to that party was just, I don't even know if I want to do the show. Like, he was very clear, like, I'm not here to do some, like, housewives drama. Like, I'm here to promote my skincare, and that's it. And just on Curtis, I want to say that out of all of the woke storylines that they had in there, because they did have them leaning in a lot of, like, you know, I was gay and I was bullied. Like, they're all trying to, like, wheel out whatever trauma porn they could, like, find in their past to, like, victimize themselves. But Curtis's was the only one that I thought really had some weight as a storyline, because there were some stakes to it about his acting career. I mean, he played Dr. Dre or something in a Lifetime movie, but, you know, he's scared that it's going to ruin his acting career, because apparently the few fans that he had were just, like, straight women that were, like, horny for him in these sort of, like, you know, BET romance, like, gangster things. And then his family were super religious and homophobic, and, well, maybe homophobic is too strong of a word. They were religious. I mean, there's a lot of that in the Black community, which kind of doesn't get highlighted, because when you have to talk about homophobia, you always have to, or just any form of bigotry, it always has to be framed as like white against minority.
My point, I guess, is that in the confessionals and in a lot of the framing of the two kind of Black guys, it was like they were making such a big deal about the representational like angle of it, which is, to me, was the producers like clearly the producers, they had a few faggots on the production team, because they were like, there's going to be petitions, so we better like make sure that it's like diverse, you know, no, and they, you know, really what? Like hammed that up.
Yes, they did. But I actually think my theory, because a lot of them were doing it to different degrees, I think they just went in feeling the pressure to do that. Like, I don't even think you would need a producer to tell. I mean, of course, the way they edited and put it together and stuff, and they choose certain storylines, but a lot of them were talking about representation, and any time they could shoehorn it in, they were. And I think they almost just do it on autopilot. Again, it's like, they feel the pressure to be these model minorities, and they're in Hollywood. It's very liberal. And they kind of think, okay, well, now I'm on this show. I have a, quote, platform, and I have to use my platform for good to, like, spread awareness about insert social cause, you know? So, I felt like that. But the criticism from the gays was so bad. I mean, I sent you a few articles. Those weren't like the worst. Like, if you go on YouTube and you look at some of the YouTubers, it was just so unoriginal, like so cliched and lame. It would just be like, I watched this dumpster fire, so you don't have to. And it's like, oh my God, can you come up with some kind of interesting like critique of this? Again, it all just boiled down to like, it should have been me hating. And yeah, the gays always do tear down these projects when they get so hung up on the whole, like, what's the right representation? I mean, what is the right representation? Because they got behind Fire Island, that Fire Island movie. I thought that was, I thought it was realistic. It was scarily realistic of a portion of the gay community for sure. But I don't know. I was more on the Thought Topic side of that, where I was like, why are you showing us all as like fisting, you know, meth heads, you know, like sex addicts on Fire Island? But I feel like the same community that hated on the real gays of WeHo got behind the Fire Island movie.
You know what I mean? yeah, I didn't see the Fire Island movie, but from what I can tell, that just sounded like tonally all over the place. So it was sort of like a romantic comedy, but then there was like fisting in
it. Yeah, it was like they go to see, I mean, it was bad. I mean, I thought it was very unfunny, because it was like mainstream, like SNL type normie comedy that is just like horrific. That I would,
Bowen Yang.
Yes. Yeah. Bowen Yang stuff. Apparently, like, I didn't even know who he was. And then I reviewed it actually with Jess from Hot Takes. And she's like, he's like really popular. And he has this like podcast, like everyone listens to it. And I'm like, oh, well, I don't.
So, so everything I've seen of him is just not funny. He's like Asian Hannah Gatsby.
Ugh, yeah, the whole movie was like that, but then it was just, it was literally just portrayed all gay guys as these, like, as just every white guy was racist against any minority. Mm-hmm. I mean, that there is that segment of the gay community for sure. I just feel like it highlighted the absolute worst parts of the drug and sex addicted, you know, superficial himbos, circuit sluts. And the woke crowd really got behind it, and then the woke crowd just ripped shreds off of the real gays of WeHo, which the most shocking thing about the real gays of WeHo is it's like, it's not the best show ever made. It's not the worst show ever made. It's just sort of like a fun, normal reality show that's like fun to watch for six episodes. And you're like, oh yeah, this has some potential. Like, bring it back for another season. Let's see, you know.
even with the like, all of the kind of commentary in the show by the guys, usually in confessionals, about like how this is really important. This is like a really important step for like gay representation. It's like, oh yeah, we've never seen gays on TV before. Yeah, this is a first. This is a first, honey. Yeah, but even with that, like, just ignore that, and you can, like, it's not a groundbreaking show or anything, but it is just like a fun show. There are like some funny quips, particularly from Brad, who is probably the wittiest one out of all of them. And there is like funny situations. It's, and the thing that's really appealing about it to me, And I agree with you. It's not the best show in the world. It's not the worst. But it wears its artificiality on its sleeve. And so, like, it no, like, I haven't watched that many Housewives shows. Like, that's your department, Jacques. But from what I can gather, it's similar in that they, like, just throw a bunch of people together who don't really know each other that well.
Yeah.
And then try to force kind of
conflict
drama out of that. I liked how they just, like, completely addressed that that's what they were doing in the show from the beginning. Like, we don't know each other.
They yeah. broke the fourth wall, like, yeah. the whole time. But here's the thing with that, because it's I'm glad that you raised that, is that they had to break the fourth wall because so many of them came on there and were putting on these facades, James, Dorian, to promote their businesses. And I heard I've listened to a few Joey Zossig podcast interviews, and he pretty much confirmed it. He's like, yeah, we kind of had to go down that route because people weren't being real on camera. So once the season starts, the first line of the show is about how they're making a reality show. And then they actually have conversations about how they're going to come across and, like, how they think they're going to be, you know, represented. Brad and Joey are the two most committed to making a reality show in the traditional sense, in that, you know, they understand the formula of a docu-soap and they're there to do it and they're okay with being messy. Brad is, Brad's hilarious, but he's on the whole time. Like, every confessional is a one-liner.
Yeah.
He actually acted like, I know you don't watch The Housewives, but on The Housewives of Beverly Hills, the longest running cast member is Kyle Richards, and she's sort of the OG, and she comes off like she's nice and kind of down to earth, but she's actually, like, the most invested in the show, and she's very good at subtly, like, pushing storylines along and, like, kind of producing the cast. And then if you do get her in a fight, she is quick on her feet, which Brad was. There's a fight in the finale. I think it's
so good.
Yeah, Brad and Curtis. And Brad was like, read him. Like, yeah, Brad was like not missing a beat. And then you have Joey. You know, he's more confrontational. He's more of a typical kind of reality star. And normally I would not enjoy a character like him because I'd be like, this is so, he's being too thirsty and fake. But having watched the whole show, then I really appreciated what he did because he dragged the fakes and the frauds on this show, like, especially James, who there's a fight. Where is it? Where they're in Palm Springs?
Yeah, it's sort of in the middle of the season.
Yes, yeah. And they all confront James and they're like, look, and they've obviously been talking about it off camera and they're kind of like, we feel like you're not, like, being authentic here and bringing, like, your real self. And then James, like, flips out and he flips out at Joey and he's like, look, I know what you're trying to do. You're trying to be the star of the show, like, and goes off completely breaking the fourth wall and he ends up, like, storming out, and then he's kind of missing for a while, and I have a feeling that he, like, must have quit the show and then they had to, like, coax him back in. Did you get that?
Yeah, like, he's missing for, like, two or three episodes and then comes back in the finale. And I think even when they have that confrontation, I think one of them mentions that, oh, you're just here to, like, push your business. And that was, like, they did that so much throughout the season. Like, they did that with Dorian as well, who was, they accused him of doing that. And then Dorian at least admitted it. He's like, yes, I am here to push my business. Whereas James didn't, like, and I think that's probably what Joey was sort of calling, reacting to anyway. The thing that's funny about Joey, I think, is that he probably out of all of them, with the exception of Brad, has the easiest time of it because essentially his career, so to speak, being an influencer, is just basically to be himself, because that's what an influencer usually is, or a version of themselves. Whereas the rest of them are, like, businessmen. They've got businesses to look after and, like, they're all, like, calculating in their head, like that fucking that soap opera woman with the equations going on.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like,
So they're all doing that. Whereas that's why I think Joey came off. I agree with you. He, in other contexts, would just be the most annoying, but he's the most endearing to me because he understood the assignment. you know.
He did. And he showed parts of his real life too. Like, he's got this fiance who, by the way, I looked up the fiance. The fiance is like a manager at like BlackRock or something, like high up. So Joey's clearly some kind of sugar baby that's been doing the rounds for like many years. He has this, that jaw is fake. There's no way that jaw is real. He has this like injected
buckle fat removal.
Yes, like Roger Ramjet kind of like face. And I saw a nude photo of him on LPSG.
Oh yeah.
Yes, we love that. Shout out LPSG.
Send it in the chat, bro.
And I will. And I'm pretty sure it was him. And if that was him, he had a huge dick, and it was very nice too, because some big dicks can be ugly, but mm-hmm. It was both very nice and huge. And I wasn't surprised. I'm like, girl, you've been doing the rounds out here. And like, like, I just know that like, he's just a professional sugar baby influencer, and I love it. And I feel like he had a lot going on in his life. I feel like he wasn't afraid to bring drama. He understood the assignment, like you said. Like at the first party, he kind of starts like a fake fight with Dorian. Dorian gets dragged to this party, and then Joey just sort of like starts having a go at him. And then Dorian's like very reactive, and they have this cat fight at the party. And it's made, I mean, Dorian's like absurd because he arrives with like security and stuff. And it's like, girl, you have like a small skincare line that like no one has ever heard of.
Oh, and that's one of his comebacks in that fight. He's like, I have a skincare line.
Oh my god, but then Dorian drags his bag. He's like, where is it? What store is it in? Like that was my favorite. Like that's what we want to watch.
Yes.
Like we do want to see that. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately there was not that much of it. There was really then and then sort of the finale, and there wasn't a lot of like drama otherwise. And then what's so funny about that fight that they have is I think it's episode two. Todrick takes Joey aside, and he kind of explains like the incident with Dorian through like a racial lens. Yeah, yeah. And Joey starts crying because then in Joey's mind, he's like, oh my god, are they gonna edit me that I was the racist one that like bullied this like black guy? And like it was so ridiculous because Todrick's like, you know, it's really hard to be like black and like go to a party, like we have anxiety or something. It's like, girl, I thought he's this big shot with security and running yes. like the hottest skincare brand, and now he can't come to a party.
Yeah,
like it was so ridiculous that they did that. And poor Joey's like crying his eyes out because Joey's thinking, oh, my influencer career's ruined. He's thinking, okay, I just signed up on this show, because at the time they were filming this, a lot of like, I know you don't keep up with the reality TV as much, but Housewives and Vanderpump Rules and like everyone was getting cancelled for like the smallest thing. That's a microaggression. Like it was really bad. It was a bloodbath. And I could tell that Joey thought that was going to be him, which luckily it wasn't, and it kind of blew over. And then he tried to like patch things up with Dorian, and Dorian just would not.
He was not having any of it. He was just not having the show, just generally. The funniest thing involving Dorian was, I think, very early in the season. It might have even been in episode one when Curtis invites him to Joey's engagement party, even though he doesn't really know Joey, and he asks him what Joey does, and then Curtis is like, oh, he's an influencer, and then Dorian's like, so unemployed.
It was so good. I thought Dorian was like a star.
He was
like,
funny.
He
wanted to fight.
Yeah, he did, and he took himself so seriously, which was like hilarious. It was also a shame because it's like, girl, you get in your own way. Like, the ego was so big because he was also the face of his own skincare brand, and he'd shot this campaign with Cassie. She's the singer she's the one-hit wonder. I actually love her, but she had that song "Me and You," R&B song from like the 2000s, and they were shooting the ad together, and like, it was the tackiest fucking campaign I've ever seen. It was hideous. And also, like, Dorian's, like, an attractive guy. Like, nothing against Dorian, but he wasn't, like, front of campaign, like, model good looking. And I'm like, you're the CEO. You don't need to be, like, in the ad with, you know, a baddie like Cassie. Like, hire a fucking model. Get Curtis in there. That was a mess. So, he's delusional. But I did love him. And I... you know, he didn't want to play ball with being on a reality show, but at the same time, his reaction was the most real kind of anyone. It was very like, well, I don't like this person, so why would I hang out with them? I don't know them, you know what I mean? Whereas everyone else is like, come meet my new friend, or let's play along, like we're doing a show.
That's why I feel like if they ever did a second season, which I'm guessing they're not going to do, like, they have to bring him back somehow, like, because...
He won't, because he did a tell-all, like, when it premiered, he did a tell-all with Love, B. Scott, where he was like, you know, I didn't even know these people, like, you know, I didn't know it was going to be like this, I thought I was, I think he said, I thought this was the A-List, which is there's this gay Bravo reality show called the A-List, which was actually way trashier than the real Friends of WeHo, but he's like, you know, I thought it was going to be a Bravo spin-off, not this MTV thing, so I don't know, he won't be back, but... They do bring it back, you know, shout out Dorian, we would love you back. But they definitely just need, get Brad, Joey and Todrick, maybe Curtis back as well. Get rid of James 100%, like buy James, like we don't want you back. And like bring in some new people. I mean, I really think that MTV should just ignore the noise and just stick with the show and ride it out. Like don't give up on it so soon. Don't let the haters win. I think that now that the show is sort of on streaming and that maybe people would have a chance to watch it without all of the, like, chatter, they might actually see, like, oh, it's actually not that bad.
Well, yeah, that's what I've seen, at least from my limited sample of, like, social media followers who have, like, just been, oh, yeah, I've just watched this on streaming and it's not that bad. Like, I don't know what everyone was talking about. And I think Joey says, you know, obviously this is self-serving for him, but he's said that as well, that, like, more people have... you know, come around to it as they've watched it, you know, on streaming and stuff. Can we talk about the finale?
Yes, yes. Let's get into the finale. Lead me.
You want me to lead?
Yes, okay. Lead the finale.
Okay, so in the finale, we have to set up because the episode before that where it's Curtis's brother comes to... What's the party for again?
Like, I can't remember.
Birthday?
I think it's a birthday. They have a party and then is it his sister?
He invites his sister, but she doesn't come for religious reasons. She's like, because she doesn't want to approve. I don't think it was that she doesn't necessarily approve. I just don't think she wanted to go to a gay bar.
Yeah, probably. And on TV, it's probably a lot. Yeah. Like, you have to remember these are, like, normal people that haven't signed up to be in the spotlight as well.
Yeah. But Curtis's brother comes, and he has a really, like, strong bond with his brother. They have, like, a really cute little lunch together before the party, and they go to the party, and then at the party, something is said about his sister, so, and why she's not there. I think Dorian actually asks that, and then Brad says, oh, she's not comfortable because of the religious thing. And then that gets back to Curtis from Dorian, and, like, it's framed as, like, oh, Brad and the others were, like, sort of, I don't know, judging his family for being religious or something like that.
Well, Dorian put some sauce on it where he sort of, like, he related in a way that it wasn't. And then Curtis, like, I mean, that was the overreaction of the century. Like, Curtis was, like, enraged. I mean, he must have had, like, producers in his ear or something saying, like, yeah, they've been talking about you, like, to rile him up. Because the producers are probably like, damn, we need some, like, drama. Like, come on, we've had, like, about one fight in six episodes. And then, yeah, what is the finale? It's just a finale party, isn't it? Or do they have some fake excuse for, like, being together?
I can't remember. They all kind of get together at this little bar. And it's a bar with only them in it as well. So, the ambiance is just kind of bleak from the beginning. And then, like, Curtis walks in, like, a really bizarre outfit, by the way. Maybe it's fashion forward for, like, WeHo, but, like, and I'm not the most fashionable person, so I can't really talk. But it's, like, ripped jeans and then, like, a tuxedo dinner jacket thing. I don't know. But anyway, he comes in all severe and then, like, starts yelling at everyone and pointing fingers. And Dorian's not there either. So, it's basically just him relaying what Dorian's said.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, accusing Brad and Joey. And I don't think James gets any heat because he's barely in the show.
He does nothing. I think they accused Todrick as well.
Oh, yeah. No, that's what... That is what put the cherry on top of, like, me liking Todrick, because it's like... Curtis said, oh, yeah, and Dorian said you flirted with him. And then everyone's like, is that true? And he's like, yeah, I flirted with him.
Yeah, that was
like
that,
the nonchalance with he just like kind of admits it is just really hilarious.
Wait, sidebar on Dorian. Yeah, we get some solo scenes of him being like, these are just not my kind of gays. Like, I'm hanging out with Todrick and he's like hitting on me and asking me how many sexual partners I've had. Like, I don't talk about that, which was like so perfect to put in the mix, because it's like you want the kind of uptight trad gay that's like not about the circuit parties, and then you want, like, you know, James on his little cruise ships. And, you know, Joey that's sugar babying. Like, I mean, if Joey, girl, if you're listening to this podcast, sorry, but we do think you're a sugar baby, but we support it. Like, you've done well in life, so we love that for you. But, like, you want the mixture of people. So, yes, I love that Dorian was, like, just so uptight about sex and, like, didn't want to be around these, like, slutty faggots like Todrick that are, you know, girl, like, what are you packing down there? Like, he was, like, not having it.
it was so funny. Like, that is the dynamic you want. You want, like, you want the slutty one. You want the uptight one. You want your four humors of Sex and the City, basically.
Yes.
Like, at least.
And Curtis is like attacking them about, like, you know, you're talking about my family, you're talking about my sister and stuff. And like Brad like snaps, and this is when you see the, like, more of the catfight side of Brad, which he's been like holding back, but like he really like handled his own, I think. And then, but then he like stormed out. It was so dramatic and gay, which I loved. Like, I'm done with this. And he like swans out and he's like, you know, stomping down the street.
In his like leopard print.
The storm outs were really good, because James had one. I think Dorian did. Yeah, Dorian at the first party. And that is such a gay thing to, like, I literally do that IRL. Like, I've had issues at work and stuff before, and I just like storm out. Like, I've stormed out of the office.
It's the Nomi Malone flounce.
Yeah.
You know? you just sort of, like, whenever someone like offends you in some way, you got to flounce out the room.
It's so gay and real. Yeah. Oh, by the way, did you like the scenes of Brad at home? Because I really enjoyed them, where he would just be pottering around the house with his husband.
They were cute. His husband was very cute and funny too. Like, that was cool. I like that.
Yeah, they had all their like Smeg appliances, and then they were
like a thousand dogs.
Yes.
A thousand little chunky dogs.
Yeah.
Were they chunk? They were like chunky kind of dogs, weren't they? Like,
yeah, they were. They had all their little fluffy dogs, and they would bicker about, like, you know, making cupcakes or something. Like, well, honey, I didn't buy the flour. Like, you said you were, or whatever. And, like, they were really funny. Although the husband, Gary Chinetti, he's actually, like, he's famous.
I've heard that, yeah.
Yeah, I looked him up. He has, like, a meme account, but oh, my God, it was so basic. Like, it was another Bo and Yang situation. Like, people love him. He has this Instagram, and he pretends to be one of, like, Kate Middleton's kids. So, he, like, talks from the POV of the, like, I don't want to be here. Like, this is boring or whatever. And everyone's like, oh, my God, haha, I'm sure that's what the little Prince George is thinking. Like, I don't get it. I'm just like, is this what it takes to be famous? I mean, like, this kind of content. Have you seen Joey's Instagram?
Yes.
It's so bad.
I wish I didn't see it. Like, I'm sorry, Joey, if you're listening, I'm sorry. But, like, I'm sure what you do, like, is really, you know, it's very helpful to a lot of people, basic bitches. But for, you know, for anyone who's got their shit together, it's kind of a little bit cringe. But
it's so bad. It's like early 2000s, like, gay BFF inspirational. Yes. Like, hey, bitch, you are fierce. You don't need that man. Like, you are everything, work, period. And it's like, girl, like, it was so bad. And I'm like, oh, my God, Joey, girl, I like you now. Like, I've become a fan of Joey. I liked him on the show. I mean, some of the podcast interviews are a little vapid, but I still, like, enjoy him. I'm like, I could be friends with Joey. Like,
can we talk about the podcast interviews? Because you sent me a couple and I've listened to them. And this is actually very educational for me, because, like, I don't really listen to normie podcasts. What is with the fucking ads?
Oh, my God, there's so many.
There are, like, ads every 5 minutes. Like, I think maybe I'm just got a distorted view of podcasts, because all the ones I listen to, I've been on, and people I've had on from other podcasts are all kind of do-it-yourself, like, if they are monetized, it's usually for Patreon or something like that. But so many ads. So many.
There's so many. I'm with a network in Australia, which I signed with it really early just because I thought it would make me look more profesh, but I basically signed with them and said, I don't want any help or any interference or you to do anything. And I said, you can put like one, I think in Australia, there's like an autoplay ad at the start. There is, there's like, I think there's like one. And then I think maybe there's one at the end and that's it. They recently had to add like another one, which I didn't want, but they got signed to a new thing. And I'm like, if I just tell them that they can't put any ads and they're just going to drop me, which is fine because I can do it on my own, but I just can't be bothered with then transferring my stuff back over to like Buzzsprout or whatever. So I'm just like, fucking let them put it in. But yeah, these ads are like the amount of ads they have on like the worst, you won't know this podcast, but Bethany Frankel's podcast, she's a housewife of New York. She does these like 9-minute podcast episodes now, and I'm not kidding, about 3 minutes are just ads of a 9-minute podcast.
Are they like produced ads or is it like her like shilling skincare?
It's like it's
and
both. Just everything, just anything she can make money from. But you know, I'm ready to sell out because after going to LA, for real, when I went to LA and then I was doing like I was getting opportunities, like I went on 2 podcasts. I went on a housewives podcast from like one of the housewives in OC, and then I went on this I went on the podcast of the wife of Chuck Lorre. He's the one he makes like Big
Two and
Bang.
A Half Men.
No shade, not my style of TV show, but he makes all these big so I went on that. And then being in LA, and you know, I went out to some like some hot spots and stuff, and I'm like, yeah, I think I'm ready to sell out now. Like, I think I'm, you know, being niche is like fine, but I was sort of like, you know, I already work in the mainstream anyway. Like, I have a mainstream media job. And then I was like, yeah, I should be the talking head on these shows. Like, I should be the talking head on like Megyn Kelly and just, you know, like this Dylan Mulvaney, it's an outrage. I'm like, I think I'm ready to step into that lane. So yeah,
there's a lot of money in that.
Ready. I'm ready to sell out, baby.
Did you get a lot of when you were in LA, a lot of like lunch meetings?
I did. I'm pitching a show. Like, I'm working on a show, which is hilarious, which I can't really talk about. And I feel like I'll probably get shafted out of it, like someone steal my idea. But it happened really organically where, I've talked about it on the Patreon. But, yeah, basically I found a thing and I already had connections. And then I pitched it and it's like the ball got rolling like very quickly. And that was very exciting, even though I know that things get pitched all the time and then nothing happens and things fall through. But just the fact that they had those opportunities there, which we don't have any of that.
None of that.
In Australia. So, yeah, I love that you were doing lunch meetings as well. It's so good.
It's so funny. Like, everyone loves to get lunch there. Like, let's do lunch.
It's the best. And, I had one with a podcast producer. Yeah, I found someone that I think when I do move over there, I found someone that I want to work with, who I'm like, honey, we're going the next level. We're going mainstream. Okay, one funny thing on that I have a note here from episode 4. Did you catch this? So, stupid fake ass James, he's on like this photo shoot and he has some lesbian photographer and he's like, mix, like MX, and like he's using non-binary pronouns for her, and then he uses it and she's like, she doesn't use them, like she clearly doesn't understand it.
She's like a proper lesbian.
Yeah, she's like a real lesbian. But then he's doing his like confessionals and he's like, you know, Debbie identifies as non-binary and I'm just so grateful to work with her because she just helps me be like, you know, a better ally. And I was like, this is so embarrassing. Like, girl, like, who are you grandstanding for? Like,
his business. That's who.
Yeah. Who? No one that can afford to come on your cruise thing is identifying as non-binary, first of all. And also, this lesbian, if she does identify as non-binary, like, she was way too old to be non-binary. It's like, you are not Gen Z, honey. I get it when you see that, you know, teenagers and like younger people doing it. I'm like, fuck, probably if I grew up in this time period, I would be non-binds, trans, whatever. But when you see people that are like over 30, even like pushing 40, 50, and they're like non-binary and they're doing like the gender bending. It's like, this is so sad. Like something really went wrong in your life that at this big old age that you're at, that you're going down this path.
Yeah, there's something disturbing about that too, because once you get to a certain age, your identity should be solidified. You shouldn't be at sea with like who you are. You should be like very stable and centered in terms of who you are, rather than like, oh, I'm nothing. I don't want to be perceived. I'm just like, I contain multitudes.
It's
like
midlife crisis vibes. Okay, do I have any other notes on WeHo? Yeah, do you have any more notes on WeHo?
I was going to say that one thing that we kind of touched on that we could go into a little bit more, maybe at another date, is how, you know, there's always this like pressure in the reception of gay media where like it's got to represent every like color of the rainbow and everything all the time. And it's just like, that's just not how media or art works. Like, you can't, unless you're doing like a, you know, centuries long soap opera, like you're never going to be able to represent every single segment of every single identity. It's not going to happen. So stop trying to make like the perfect, the enemy of the good. I think the show is good. I don't think it's terrible, but I just think this attitude that like, it's not representative enough of this or that, or, but you know, if you care about representation or whatever, which I don't for the record.
Yeah, not really. No one with a brain does.
But if you do care about it, it's like, well, it's representing that. It's representing what it's representing and just be at peace with that.
Well, that's why the representation crowd should kind of be like, okay, now we have another gay show. So this can represent that type of gay. Then Fire Island represents, you know, the prepped out fisters, and then Drag Race is the drag queens. And then I'm sure there's some like Pete Buttigieg is the fucking buttoned up, like, you know, psychopath. Like, I mean, we just more, then you can get all the different colors of the rainbow. You can get every, yeah. I mean, you've got a lot of fucking colors in that flag now and things wedged in there. Like, just support the shows. But they're the same people that say, we need more representation. You give it to them. Not that kind. Mm. It's like, okay, girl. Like,
also, shut up and make it then. Like, I'm sick of hearing these whinges, like, going on and on and, like, critiquing every fucking thing under the sun. And, like, I'll be critical. Like, if something, I don't like something or whatever, or if I like something, I will evaluate it, like, if I want to. But you also got to be generative. Yeah. Like, I don't think you can spend all your life, like, shitting on things if you're not gonna make anything. Do something with your life, like Dorian. Well, he's got a POC skincare range.
And you know what? I have some tea on Dorian. Oh, when I was in LA, I went into a Sephora and I saw Butter skincare stocked. It was very small. It was a very small section, but I saw it in person and I was like, okay, like it's actually in stores. Cause on the Friends of WeHo, they bill it as it's the first gender neutral skincare line from a person of color to be stocked at Macy's. And I'm like, this is very specific.
How's that for representation?
Very specific.
Also, yeah, the name, I forgot about that actually, the name of the skincare, Butter. Like every time he said it, I was like thinking Butterface. So like that is not a good association to make with the skincare line.
I mean,
Butterface.
It's smooth and, well, I mean, Butterface for him in that campaign with, it was like, girl, you should not be in that campaign. Not saying you're not good looking, you're just not campaign material. And, you know, if they want some real representation, why don't we do a show about the trans rights activists, raw and unedited?
God, that would be amazing. You know, that would be so good.
The libs of TikTok kind of fodder. Do a show about their friend group. That's some real. And see how much the LGBT community will like that representation. They will be begging for the real Friends of WeHo to be back on air if they made that show.
Jacques, that is brilliant. Is that the show you pitched?
No, but I probably should.
Like, because that's the sort of drama we need. We, like, need, like, crazy tranny energy up in here. Like, that's going
to
be...
They have too many social phobias and anxieties to even film. Can you imagine if you put them in front of, like, an actual camera? They would just be having, like, a panic attack. I saw one, like, I actually need to unfollow. Like, some of those accounts... I follow some of them just for like the cringe and the fun, but they are so hateful and transphobic and like vicious now, a lot of them. Mm. You know, the sort of like libs of TikTok and libs of TikTok adjacent accounts. Like there's one that I've been following, I think it's called Men in Disguise, and it really quickly has just turned like horrible. But they did post something, and it was someone asking about if they pass, and they were like, you know, I'm trying to pass, but I can't grow my hair past my shoulders because of my sensory issues. And it's like, oh my God, what? I would like to watch a show about those people if they could get it together. Do I have any other notes on this? Yeah, I don't know. I just think the gays need to, I don't know, they're so insecure. They hate seeing themselves reflected back. But you could probably put me in that category, though, because I was mean about bros. Like, I ripped on bros. I had a viral bros tweet, but it was more about Billy Eichner's response to bros bombing as opposed to the film itself.
That was unhinged. Yeah. And, like, his response to it was just like, girl, if you create something and you put it out there and people critique it, no matter how they're critiquing it, you just need to shut up. Like, it's true. Like, let the work speak for itself. Like, you don't do yourself or the piece of work that you've put out into the world any favors by, like, getting into that sort of, like, unhinged territory of, like, this means this and it's so important. And, like, it's just really unbecoming.
The ego meltdown was, like, unbelievable. But, yeah, I mean, gays do hate seeing themselves reflected back, which is not a surprise. I mean, gay people are ridiculous. Like, they are, like, we are a ridiculous type of person, and it can be hard to watch your behavior reflected back. I mean, I feel like a lot of the gays, the types that were criticizing the real gays of WeHo, they probably, one of the characters on that show is probably similar to what they are like. And probably, I think that was a hard pill to swallow. Anyway, yeah, I hope they bring it back. It's actually a good show. People should watch it. Like, I'm not saying it's the best show ever, but it's only 6 episodes. It's fun. Like, it's a bit different. The way they break the fourth wall adds a kind of different dimension to this that we're not really getting. Like you were pointing out with The Real Housewives, they sort of, they're trying to break the fourth wall a little bit on The Housewives now because they sort of have to, because we all know how fake and manufactured it is. But this leans into it even more in a way that's like quite refreshing, and it doesn't treat the viewer, you know, like we're stupid, which a lot of the reality shows are at the moment. So guys, check it out. I think it's like everywhere. I think it's on Paramount Plus now in Australia, and it's on MTV.com in America. And, you know, let's get those streaming numbers up and get a season 2. Thank you for coming on the pod. Tell people about your show, which I am going to come on once we, I mean, you're going to be in the States. When you come back from the States, we're going to do like an alien episode, right?
Yeah, we are. We are going to do an alien. Yeah, so my show is, it's called Getting Lit. It's like a literary and cultural podcast. It's basically, used to have 3 hosts, now it's just me. And it's kind of like a sort of, I read a book or watch a movie or both sometimes, or play a video game as well, like, and just sort of talk about it from my kind of personal lens, I guess. And I'm very much a, it's all about the love and the passion and stuff. Like, I don't really like choose things to talk about that are like, that I hate or that I'm critical of. It's all about like, this is really good. You should read it or watch it or whatever. And I'm kind of trying to sort of like bring back reading, particularly with like my audience, which seems to be mostly men and mostly people in America. That's another reason why I should probably move. But, and I know that, The Rare Candy Guy is another great podcast are trying to do that with as well, like men's reading groups, which I think is really cute.
I love Rare Candy. They got me into Michael Crichton.
Yeah, yeah, they're awesome. Yeah. I love those guys. So
he's coming back on soon, by the way. He's doing Lovers. He's been on my show a few times. We do Lovers Blind reviews together, and he's coming back on for it. Yeah,
he's coming on mine too soon. Yeah, I'm trying to make reading great again. And also, what I'm trying to do with my show as well is trying to get away from a lot of book shows which are, like, really lib-brained and, like, really NPR and really boring. So, like, we go on, like, interesting tangents, talk about pop culture, all of that fun stuff. So, I always have great guests, including Jacques, who will join me soon. So you guys should check it out.
Yes, I'll plug that. Did you feel like, I mean, you started it as like a literary podcast specifically, and then you were definitely like, I want to include like video games and movies, right?
Yeah, pretty much. Because one, practicalities, because it's really hard to read a book a week, yeah. Even for me, someone who reads 5 books at the same time, it can be very difficult to catch up to the schedule. So, like, something that doesn't require as much, like, sort of time, because I also work. So, isn't my full-time job. So, bringing in other forms of media is helpful in that regard.
Okay, guys, thanks for listening. You know, this was my first show back since, I don't know, over a month, which is the longest break I've ever had from the pod. But yeah, thank you for listening. Follow me on social media at UnpopularJP on Instagram and Twitter. Check out all the extra content on the Patreon. That's where I do all the Housewives recaps. And make sure you check out the Gettin' Lit pod. The links to everything will be on the show notes. And I'll see you guys all next week. Bye.